We're going to get started. We don't have a quorum. And actually, I thought I would be the one late. I came in. You know, I like to do my runs before I start my day, so I went out and did my 10-mile run. But when I left my house this morning, for some reason, I don't know if any of you guys noticed, they had all the practice drivers out on the roads again. Every time we get that first snowfall or something, they're all practicing on how... And then when somebody goes in the ditch, you notice that everybody stops to look. It's like, what's up
but
with
not
that?
Help.
Yes. And you might even say, I had a little run-in this morning, so I'll start out with a little levity here, is I have been running out here on Summit for 4 years. And I've had a few run-ins with cars, but this morning, just to prove that even our peace officers get a little distracted once in a while, and it's always on the same two intersections that I get hit, but I got hit by a police car that forgot to stop for a stoplight. So I'm like, how's this work? You know, I couldn't stop. I come off the sidewalk, and it's a little slippery, and I could see the cop car wasn't going to stop, and I just, you get used to spreading out to handle the impact. And I just looked at this police officer, and I pointed to the stoplight and pointed to my little guy on the crosswalk that said I could go, and I'm kind of going, all right, whatever. So the day started out that way for me, so I'm hoping that you guys can all help me get back on track to a positive day that looks a little more bright than that. So welcome, everyone. Like I said, we're going to get started. We don't have a quorum, but we're really here today to have Nell give us, I guess, her insight on the report. Everybody had plenty of time to look at the report, so I imagine there's going to be a few questions. And I know when I looked at it, there was a lot of times when I said, what does it mean and where can we go from here? So we'll just let Nell get started.
I don't know if I need a microphone. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah,
raise your hand if you can't hear me.
Where's recorded? I don't know who's
recording.
It's recorded.
Okay.
And these are.
Okay, so that's as close as it's probably recording me. Okay. Well, first off, I want to thank you for nice Minnesota weather coming in from Arizona. You know, I'm sitting there on my phone going, "Is the airport open? Is the airport open?" Because kept on saying it was snowing and sleeting and raining, and that doesn't slow y'all down. So anyway, thank you. I broke out my leather jacket. That's my winter coat. Yes, the report went out, and that was kind of to give everybody a good briefing of what was going on, how the states were comparing, what the information was that we were gathering. And today, I'm going to give you a little bit more insight as to what came out of that research. But also, I am looking for questions. I'm looking for comments, because when I leave here, I'll be going back and putting together my final report based on your input. So based on my report and your input, I will put together a final report that will lay out what's really going on there.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Stubbs, I'm looking on the spreadsheet you gave us on the quick synopsis of aviation program funding sources. Under Minnesota, there's a flight property tax, doesn't have anything in the Minnesota box.
They put it under other. Where I got this information was from the NASAO funding directory, funding guide. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the flight property tax was captured under the category of other, but still aviation funding.
Just, Mr. Chairman, just so we know that it is accounted for. Thanks. That was my question.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions before I kind of start with the presentation and get through this, and then we can have time to take more questions? Tracy?
Mr. Chairman, and
Tracy.
I have one question. How were the states chosen?
The states were chosen by the task force. They gave me a list of states that they wanted me to compare Minnesota to, and then at the very last minute we added Arizona. Because I made the comment that Arizona is very similar to Minnesota and that it would be good to throw Arizona in there as a good comparison. But the states were chosen by the task force.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Anything else? All right. If I'm not paying attention, just chime in. Go ahead, Nell.
Okay. So when we're looking at... First thing I looked at was funding. You know, how are the states funded? Where do they get their dollars? And the state funding sources are fuel taxes, sales taxes, aircraft registration fees, property taxes, ad valorem taxes, whatever you want to call them, flight property taxes, highway taxes, general funds, and always that favorite category of other. If you don't know where else to put it, we'll put it under other, not my favorite category. State taxes on aviation, I'm just going to look at those right away. We've got fuel taxes, sales and use taxes, aircraft registration fees. We have taxes by another name. Arizona calls it a license tax, although it is still a registration fee. Flight property taxes. When we refer to something as a flight property tax, we're typically referring to a tax on the airlines, and personal property taxes. I just did a report for another group. A consulting company hired me to do some research on airline taxes, and I found out that there's very few states that don't tax the airlines. They may be exempt from what we, general aviation, have to pay, but they're having to pay flight property taxes in most states. Okay, of the states surveyed, I first want to point out that Delaware and Illinois did not get back to me regarding funding. Delaware, I'm not going to worry about. They really have no funding, and they only have one person in their flight department. It's not a high. I wouldn't compare myself to Delaware. Illinois, on the other hand, I saw Dr. Shea at the NASAO annual meeting and talked to her about the information. She said she'd get back to me, but I still have not seen the information. So I do apologize, but I could not get the information from Illinois on funding. But I do know how they tax aviation. The state sales and use taxes, except for Montana, all the states surveyed, this is 13 states, have a sales tax, and the sales tax ranges from 4% in South Dakota to 7.25% in California. This is only a state tax. This does not include local. This is just state. And this all goes to the general fund. None of these states dedicate their sales tax to aviation. It all goes to the general fund. Fuel taxes, you can see Arizona, California, Florida, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, Wisconsin dedicate this tax to an aviation fund. 10 out of the 13 states surveyed, 77% dedicate their fuel tax revenues to an aviation fund. Registration fees, again, you can see the states that have a registration fee, and they all dedicate this fee to their aviation fund. So this is where a lot of the funding is coming from, is fuel taxes and aircraft registration fees. Personal property taxes, these are not imposed by the state. They are imposed by the county. And of the states surveyed, only California and Texas have a personal property tax. Has anybody ever lived in a personal property tax state? You would think that myself, being the tax lady, could avoid tax states with personal property taxes. But no, I live in Arizona, so we have a personal property tax. It is, it's a personal property tax assessed on the property. However, the property tax in California and Texas is only based on the amount of time that aircraft spends in the state. So it's not all or nothing. It is based on a pro-rata amount of time spent in the state. Airline taxes. Arizona, California, Illinois, you can see the states, all tax the airlines. Iowa does not tax the airlines. Michigan does not tax the airlines. So interesting to note that, because they're neighboring states. Only Arizona, Minnesota, and Wisconsin dedicate this flight property tax, or whatever you want to call it, to aviation. So only in Arizona, Minnesota, and Wisconsin will you see a chunk of money, somewhere around $8-9, maybe in some years, maybe $10 million in, coming from the flight property tax. Other taxes and fees, these are just taxes by another name, and these are typically dedicated to aviation. The other place that the state gets aviation funding is from federal taxes. We have the non-commercial taxes. All this money goes into the Aviation Trust Fund to be used for matching dollars for aviation projects within the states. The non-commercial tax is a fuel tax. You hardly even notice it. You just pay it at the pump and you're done with it. It's about 21.9 on jet fuel, about 19.4 on avgas, and it just goes into the Aviation Trust Fund. commercial taxes, and non-commercial would be Part 61, Part 91. That would be the private pilots and the companies that own and operate aircraft exclusively for their business. That's the non-commercial aviation. Commercial taxes would apply to Part 135 operations and 121. We won't get into that there's some 91 that it applies to because that's not the purpose of this session, but primarily 135 and 121. The interesting part is that nobody can tell us how much of the commercial taxes come from 135 versus 121. No one can tell us what portion of those taxes collected are coming from 135. So one of those interesting side bits. Transportation of persons is 7.5%. The tax on 135 is the same as 121. You look at your airline ticket, 7.5% plus a $3.50 segment fee for each segment of the flight, same with 135. And that there's a transportation of persons, and that's on international and domestic, different taxes, but all that money goes into the aviation trust fund. Transportation of property is also a commercial tax. It's 6.5% within the U.S. Do not tax property being transported outside the U.S. So just looking at the funding, and you have that spreadsheet. You can put on the magnifying glass. And Texas receives no monies from aviation. They get all their aviation funding from the highway fund. It's basically 2% of all the monies collected for the highways. It does amount to about $16 million, but it's all from highway. Arizona, California, Iowa, Montana, and South Dakota get no funding from the general fund or the highway fund, so they're completely self-funded. In all fairness, Minnesota receives $837,000 from the general fund. So not a huge dollar amount.
Got a couple questions. Just a minute. Mike, just hang on a second.
Yeah. Sure.
Mr. Chairman, just a clarification. I asked Gary Workman about that highway fund. That is for MnDOT aircraft
pilots
and pilots expense. Yeah. So in essence, that money isn't going into improve airports or support the
not
systems.
Going for an aviation use other than the state. Pilots.
I'm sorry. Now, okay. Where is it going?
Mr. Chair, it goes to support pilot positions, and then also when the trunk and other employees, non-aviation employees, non-aeronautics employees, so those employees who are supported by the trunk highway, when they use the plane, we carry them to a district or something for a meeting. The trunk highway reimburses us for the cost of the trip.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is more a reimbursement of costs. Yeah. Okay.
That was exactly my question, Mr. Chair, so I'm glad Brian asked it. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Arizona, you'll notice a couple of notes in there. When it comes under other, I tried to identify some of the other. Arizona gets some money from the Grand Canyon revenues and grants, investment interest in that. Iowa gets about $1.5 million from the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund. Mm-hmm. Iowa, effective fiscal year 2009, now has a dedicated aviation fund, and their registration fee will now be dedicated to this aviation fund and not to the general fund. So they just now have a dedicated fund, and money's going into there. And I already spoke about Texas there. So state funding from high to low, Florida, my goodness, they get a huge amount of money. They collect $55,700,000 in fuel taxes. Why is that? Everybody pays 6.9 cents per gallon for fuel. Everybody. Airlines. Everybody. Nobody's exempt. And then they receive significant federal funding. They have significant state funding as well. South Dakota is the lowest at $1.1 million as far as funding at the state level. Order of state funding, Florida is the highest, South Dakota is the lowest, and you can see that Minnesota is about fifth from the top there. So 5 out of 13 is where Minnesota ranks as far as the amount of funding they have. In addition to the state funding, states receive federal funding. It's based on the type of airports within the state, such as primary, non-primary, general aviation, and reliever. And it's on the report, shows you how much money they get based on these types of airports. Some states receive money as part of their system plan. I have North Dakota noted because they seem to receive a lot of money, $1.39 million, almost $1.4 million North Dakota receives for their system plan. And just looking at North Dakota, it just struck me odd that they received so much money for a system plan, whereas states with larger hub airports did not receive as much. So it was kind of an interesting note. Block grant states, Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Wisconsin, means that they just get a block of money from the FAA to spend. I mean, they have to get approval for it, but it's not the total approval process that Minnesota has to go through. They don't receive a block grant. 8 out of 13 states have a dedicated aviation trust fund. Interesting that not all of them do. Employees, you can see that 4 states have less than 12 employees, but yet all the other states have more than 25. So there's a big disparity. Again, North Dakota has more than 25 employees. It's kind of interesting to me. Of the 13 states surveyed, and to me this is very important, was that when you're comparing Minnesota to other states, that you need to look at similar size states, similarly run states, or similarly the types of airports that are in this state. And Arizona, Michigan, Minnesota and Pennsylvania all have one large hub airport. Texas has 2 large hub airports. I mean, that's why I put this down here, because I thought it was very interesting. California has 3. Florida has 4 large hub airports. Texas has 2 large. So I didn't put them in there because they have many more large hub airports to support than Arizona, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and Minnesota. So these states have 1 large hub. So how does Minnesota compare to these 13 states? Again, 8 out of 13 exempt aircraft operating on 135 and 121 certificates. So if the aircraft is on a 135 certificate, some states say it has to be exclusively on a 135. Some say it has to be used primarily. Some say 50%. But whatever, you can put your aircraft on a 135 certificate in 8 out of these 13 states and be exempt from that state's sales tax. Arizona and Florida and Minnesota, only 121s are exempt. So you don't extend the same exemption to the 135 carriers. It's only extended to the 121 airline type aircraft, scheduled. That's why then I put in there that Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, Montana do, because they're close proximity here to Minnesota, trying to pull that out of there. However, Minnesota does have other sales tax exemptions for aircraft coming in here. Sale for resale, meaning you can set up a leasing company, lease it to the operating company, and pay use tax on the lease payments. It's a tax deferral mechanism, not a tax avoidance mechanism. Fly away, people can come to Minnesota, take delivery of the aircraft, and remove it from Minnesota and not owe tax to Minnesota. Trade-in credit, you can trade it in and you only pay sales tax on the difference, much like your car. And if you pay tax in another state, you can get a credit here in Minnesota. The fuel tax in Minnesota is low compared to most states, except that most of the states do exempt airlines. So it's very low because it's only on the first couple hundred thousand, then it goes on down to 0.5 cents a gallon. And you can see by the revenues from fuel taxes, it's not even $1.5 million in fuel tax revenues because of the way your fuel is taxed. 7 out of 14 states have an aircraft registration fee. The Arizona and Iowa registration fees can be significant. I think anything over $5,000 is significant. You know, it kind of hurts if you don't know about it. Arizona has 0.5% of fair market value. So that's half of the initial tax here in Minnesota. So that's what we're looking at. And so it's 0.5% every year, forever and ever and ever. A lot of people complain that Arizona's tax is too high. However, we point out that Arizona is next door to California, which has a 1.07% personal property tax. So compared to our neighboring state, we're okay. Iowa has, they capped theirs about 5 years ago. About 5 years ago, they capped it at $5,000. Minnesota's registration fee is the highest initially. However, because it goes down to 25% of 1% over a period of 5 or 6 years, eventually it comes more in line with the surrounding states.
Okay.
Question?
Gary, do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, you mentioned the fuel tax, but I think you misread that. You said 1.5. I think you looked at Montana when you meant.
Oh.
It's 3.
Oh, I'm sorry, 3.8. You're right. 3.8. Okay. And, you know, when I look at that, I'm also looking at Arizona that immediately gives the airlines a 0.5 cent. No, they only pay tax on the first 1 million gallons, and after that it goes away. And so you see Arizona only has 460,000. So you can see the impact of how you exempt the airlines. California does not exempt. Florida, of course, doesn't. Pennsylvania, I'm trying to think of who has a sliding scale here. Nobody else, just Minnesota and Arizona have a sliding scale. Sorry, thank you. I did look at the wrong number. California and Texas have a personal property tax. That is significant, but it is based on time spent in state. Even for non-commercial aircraft, Texas will allow you in to pay the tax on the amount of time spent in the state. It's we come up with a ratio based on the total number of takeoffs on that aircraft with a numerator of just the takeoffs in Texas, and that gives you a fraction to multiply to the fair market value, reducing the amount that's being subjected to the personal property tax. So every state, you know, that's the way they handle it. Flight property tax on the airlines, only Arizona and Minnesota dedicate this to aviation. I want to make sure of the states. Actually, and Wisconsin. Arizona, Minnesota, and Wisconsin do dedicate their flight property tax to aviation. I've been through all 50 states. I could probably say there might be 3, maybe 4 other states that might dedicate this tax to aviation. So we're talking less than 10, you know, less than 20% of the states dedicate their flight property tax to the airlines. It goes to the general fund. Florida, Iowa, and Michigan do not even tax the airlines. I'll qualify that. I don't consider $100 a tax, but Iowa will tax a scheduled airline $100. So I put them in no tax.
Mr. Chairman, $100 what?
$100 per year for scheduled airlines.
Oh, okay. That is pretty light.
Right. Yeah, I thought so.
I'm going to just note here, too, that we have a quorum present.
Again, they're dedicated. Minnesota registration fees, flight property tax, and the fuel taxes are all dedicated to aviation. So it really, you know, makes you look, you know, you receive very little, you receive no money from the general fund. That's just a reimbursement of costs. Mm-hmm. So technically you receive no money from the general fund. So you are self-funded. However, and this came up, and I believe my friend over here in the back from Minnesota that was in Niseo asked the question. I spoke at Niseo, and the National Association of State Aviation Officials. There's a group for everybody. All the states are a member of the National Association of State Aviation Officials, and I spoke this year on state taxes. And the question came up, you know, do the operators care that all this money is dedicated to aviation to be used for aviation improvements within the state? No. They don't care. They really don't. They're just looking at the bottom line. They're looking at any way they can. And I don't care if it's a large public company that owns corporate aircraft or it's Joe Blow who just bought his first PC-12. They don't care that the money's going to fund aviation. It might be my final argument when I'm trying to tell people when they're trying to pick a state of where to hangar their aircraft. Do I pick, California or do I pick Minnesota because I spend 50% of my time in each state? At the bottom of the, you know, at the end of the day, I might sit there and say, well, you know, at least the money that you pay here is going to fund aviation. And that might put it over the top. But it's not their number one concern. Dollars and cents is their number one concern.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman and Ms. I'm sorry, Neil Bracken with the MBAA, and I'm just a little concerned with that statement and maybe how it's awarded. It can be a little subjective, I guess. I don't know how it was asked and what exactly the group is from right there. I can just speak with our membership, who are the aircraft owners and operators throughout the state, and we represent over 130 companies, in the state. And I don't think there's a more important issue to them than the registration fees and the monies that we pay into this fund, that it is spent on Minnesota and on the airports and on the structural improvements within the state. So I can speak with regards to our membership. We would be on the complete polar opposite of that opinion or that statement, and that the importance is that it's kept in the state and that it is meant for improvements in the infrastructure here in Minnesota.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment on that. You're working with the educated bunch of aircraft owners and operators with the MBAA. When you get a person buying their aircraft, well, let's put it this way. I'm extremely busy right now with people avoiding taxes, okay? And every time I tell them that the money is going to be dedicated to aviation, that this money goes into the Aviation Trust Fund, they go, that's great. How can I reduce my tax? So the bottom line is, how can I avoid it? If I can't avoid it, how can I reduce it? So because it's being dedicated, yeah, that's nice, but it's not my number one concern. My number one concern is to keep the cost of this aircraft as low as possible. Not saying that, you know, my God, you're buying a $10 million airplane, you know, you should be able to afford, you know, $5,000 in taxes, whatever it is. That's not the argument, and they don't take that argument. That's not a good argument. And as a consultant, I can throw out any wild idea I want to them just to kind of see what kind of response I'm going to get. And they really would, you know, yes, they would care, you know, at the very end of the day. And the educated consumer does care that it is dedicated. I care, or I wouldn't have included it in my state tax guide, because I think it's very important to know where these monies are going. But the general consumer of aircraft doesn't really... It's not a high button item. So I should put, should I should reword it and say, not high on their order of priorities.
Thanks, Neil, for bringing that up, because I think we go through that as legislators on a lot of issues. Is you know, whoever is educated on certain subjects tend to view it a little bit different than somebody that doesn't have all the information at hand. So, Brian.
Mr. Chair, also a comment, and I appreciate Mr. Bracken's comments regarding that. While I'm on the airport side of the fence, I can also say that our FBO operator, Monaco Air Duluth, is very concerned about those monies being invested back into aviation. And an example would be that we just, the airport authority was just leveraged about $2.8 million in federal and state dollars to do a major improvement, and the airport authority invested about $600,000 to help match those funds that will certainly open up additional corporate activity in their general aviation area. So, again, I want to say that we need to be careful with I think, that comment, and I think you explained where that general comment was coming from.
Yep, and that's, you know, it is where the where it comes from. The educated consumer, I guess that's my thing, is that you're sitting, you've been looking at this, and people are saying, well, the taxes in Arizona, I won't pick on Minnesota, in Arizona are too high. Well, what, you know, well, how can I reduce my taxes? Well, I'm not an, you know, I'm going to hangar my airplane in New Mexico. Why are you going to hangar your airplane in New Mexico when you live in Arizona? Well, because they have a registration fee of $300 or $400. But you live in Arizona, so don't you think you want to pay your taxes in Arizona and have them go to fund, you know, aviation in Arizona? No, I want to pay the lowest tax I can. So that's where I'm going, is that everybody is looking to where they can hangar their aircraft, where they can reduce their taxes. So that's the big thing, and that would be, I think, one of the premises of the whole study. My understanding was that there's been a lot of concern about people that own aircraft in Minnesota about the registration fee, that it's higher than most. So that being said, and people have said, have very effectively not hangared their aircraft in Minnesota. They are now hangaring their aircraft in states like Illinois. They give them a 135 exemption from sales tax. Hangaring them in Wisconsin, where there's a 135 exemption from sales tax. Hangaring them in Iowa, where there's a cap on the aircraft registration fee. Aircraft are multi-state assets, and it's not difficult to put that aircraft into another state to reduce their tax burden. Yes, sir.
That's been an issue that we've been hearing about since the start of this committee, and I still am anxious to hear for the actual examples.
Say again?
That's been an issue that we've been hearing about, that airplanes have truly moved out of state, and I'm not doubting it. I think that it is very possible, but it really would be nice to have a list of examples at some point where someone says, here are some, and here's what the state is missing out on.
Well, and I think, yes, we started out that conversation, Mitch, with that it was more anecdotal evidence, and those of us that have hangars and the neighbor says, well, so-and-so moved over to Rice Lake or some other area to operate because it was cheaper on insurance and cheaper on registration. And so we are looking for some of the, you know, any kind of way to dig into the factual data on that, I guess.
It'd be very difficult for me to reveal my clients that have moved their aircraft to other states for obvious reasons. So that's going to be very, very hard to come up with. However, I can give you examples without naming names. But I can't name names.
I think that's good wherever we can go. That
as close as I can get to giving you true examples without giving out a name, I will do that. But I cannot reveal the name of my client.
Fair enough.
I think the point that I was trying to make by that is to say, you know, that's the focus that we've been on from the start. And I think right at the start we had quite a few people mention and say, look, let's get down to the facts of that and figure out what we are missing. And I think it would be important for this committee to understand, is it one G4? Is it one Cherokee?
He was speaking his mic.
Is it 12 G4s and it's real revenue? I mean, then we really, I think you're going to get people sitting up at the table and saying, oh, we really are missing out on 12 G4s.
Use your mic.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Because I know where to find data. Have you queried the FAA registration list where the aircraft are registered? Because certainly if they're registered in a Minnesota LLC or owned by, you know, have a parent company that's a Minnesota company, and that aircraft is not in, does not show up on the Minnesota registration list, that would be a clue to me. Hi, I'm sorry. Hi, Mike.
Every time I buy another Apache and register it in my company name in Shakopee, I get a letter from Gary's office saying, where's the tax on? They're pretty good at that over there.
But, you know, I have a lot of companies that it could be a Minnesota company, and they're going to set up a Delaware LLC and hangar it in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But somewhere there is a trail up to a, you know, who is the member of that LLC? And if you can track who the member of that LLC is, then you can track that there's a Minnesota connection.
Okay, anything else?
Just to carry that thought a little further, Mr. Chairman. Oh, and just a housekeeping item from a former audiovisual guy. These mics are very directional, and what we're saying is being recorded. So even though we can hear you speak, if you point a mic at you when you have a question, it's good for whoever's trying to transcribe the meeting minutes later, so they don't have to go to the, you know, whatever. The point is, the anecdotal evidence, I can think of three off the top of my head that I won't mention either, but I'm not even sure that the ownership would show up as a Minnesota company the way they've structured it. Mm-hmm. But they're still using the aviation services here, which I know causes our friends at Aeronautics some consternation, because there's a sense that if you're using it here, you should be paying for the system, because Minnesota has a long tradition of having user fees dedicated to the system that we enjoy.
Absolutely.
And it is one of the best aviation infrastructures in the country. So I think we, at least speaking for this elected official, I'd like to see us reduce the impediments to having people bring them home. There are some good Minnesota corporations that just bite the bullet, pay the tax, and base here just because they're good corporate citizens, and we appreciate those people. But still, there's other folks where the bottom line is much more important, crucial, or what have you, and they're moving them out of town. And I think they're doing it in a way that it's not really that easy for aeronautics to check the FAA list and then check the airport registrations or aircraft registrations and match them up. It's pretty easy to get around that. So
it is. It takes a lot of work.
It does.
The thing these states were not included in the survey, but we have Michigan, Indiana, and Illinois that have introduced new exemptions for aircraft coming in for maintenance. Mm-hmm. We have Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island exempting aircraft from their state sales tax. There's a lot of... I just got a call from a person in New York wanting to know what is the impact of taxes on the migration of aircraft out of the state. So there's a lot of attention being paid to how the different states are taxing aircraft. I'm not going to recommend... You know, I'm not going to tell you which route to go. But I certainly would look at the maintenance area, make sure that you know you're not competing unfairly with states that do exempt maintenance. Basically what that means, the aircraft coming into the state are not going to be hit with a sales tax when the aircraft comes into maintenance. It doesn't trigger the 60-day rule or 30-day rule. It comes in, the aircraft is worked on, and then the aircraft is removed from the state within 15, 20, 30 days after the work is done. No sales tax is imposed on that aircraft. So it's allowing the maintenance facilities to, you know, employ people within the state. So it's not always directly related to the aviation. It's also just related to the economy. I would take a look at the 135 exemption. That money, that sales tax, does not come to the Aviation Trust Fund. It does not come to the Aviation Trust Fund. You know, if 135 aircraft were exempt from sales tax in Minnesota the same way they're exempted in Wisconsin and Illinois and Michigan, that would be an added incentive for staying in Minnesota because there'd be a sales tax exemption. Again, it wouldn't impact the Aviation Trust Fund because that money does not come to the Aviation Trust Fund. So, and I would revisit the aircraft registration fee. Not to cut off your nose to spite your face, but take a look at it and see, you know, how do you want to stick with that, or, you know, is there another way, a better way? Not my call.
All right. I guess we can continue.
Well, that's the end of my presentation. I'm just opening up for questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. Is it possible to get a black and white of that presentation from my files?
Yes, I'm hoping we can.
Here, or is it here already?
No. Okay. I finished it at midnight last night.
Okay.
So I'll send it to Sally, and Sally will take care of it from there?
Thank you.
Okay.
Great. Brian. Mr. Chair, I think this is a good start. It's a lot of background information, and certainly gives us a comparison of what the charges are from state to state. What I would like to see, however, is what does this mean for the different types of users? What does it mean for a guy that owns a Cirrus or a Cessna aircraft that's basing it at a hangar in Lake Elmo or at another state airport? What does it mean for corporate aviation that flies a Citation or a Hawker or a G4 or G5 in the state? And what does it mean for a commercial airliner, you know, operating in an A320? I think if we have some of that information, it will really tell us what the costs are. The other comment is, you know, we talk about aircraft moving out of state to take advantage of a situation in Wisconsin or Iowa or the Dakotas, but we also, you know, fuel fuel taxes are also an issue there. And according to the data, what I've seen is fuel taxes are significantly higher in Wisconsin. So is that guy flying back to Minnesota to buy his fuel then? So I think that has to be factored into the equation as well. Or maybe the users aren't paying as much attention to that element. But I think those are some additional comparisons that I think would be helpful as we move forward.
Well, I'd love to comment on that, Brian, because that's always been kind of one of my things in terms of I was a business owner for almost 25 years. And when you're looking at your tax liabilities, you tend to look at it more on a chart like this, and you're saying, well, okay, we'll concentrate on registration fees. If registration fee is significantly less in Wisconsin, you're looking at one line item, but it looks like a significant item to you, and that's why we needed all these things to kind of say, well, okay, we don't want the money to go down, but can we diffuse it somewhat where it looks comparative or we look like we're more comparable to Wisconsin or Iowa or Illinois. So I think that's part of where we needed to head here, and that's a very good example. But having been around too many business owners, we look at one line item and we say, well, if I can drop this down significantly, it's a good deal. But we're not looking at the rest of it. What are we paying? Is there another way we're paying the same thing?
There are two pieces of paper. One says task one, one says task two. Task two has a breakdown on every single state on how Part 91, Part 135, and Part 121 is taxed and who's exempt from what. And if you look at Wisconsin, only Part 91 pays their sales and use tax on fuel. 135 and 121 are exempt from the sales tax on fuel. So, again, it's that 135 connection, I think, is something that should really be visited. But this does give you a breakdown on how each segment of aviation is taxed. Okay. And I do have some updates to it. The state taxes, by the way, change at the blink of an eye. So sometimes we know about it ahead of time. Sometimes we find out about it 15 days later, but they do change quickly.
Great.
Mr. Chair,
This, I understand, is task three of potentially four tasks. The first task is the survey. The second is the study. The third is the presentation. And the fourth task is provide additional data collection and or analysis of alternative revenue options and funding mechanisms as requested by the task force. I wonder if one potential source of revenue needs additional study, and that would be the providing of facilities for the fractional ownerships and in comparison to their contribution to the state airports fund. As an example, one of the major fractional owners that has well over 100 aircraft, according to records in 2004, received rebates on the their fuel taxes that would equate to 1.2 million gallons for the total for that $1.2 million. They paid $10,000 in 2004 for the use of the Minnesota facilities. In comparison, a Fortune 500 company in Minnesota that has five aircraft and used approximately a third of that amount of fuel paid approximately $500,000. So there's major inconsistencies. California, and I'm sure Nell's aware of this, has in 2007 passed legislation trying to get at the fractional owners to get their participation in the facilities that they use. And maybe
it's a personal, they've effective fiscal year 08-09, fractionally owned aircraft, 91 subpart K aircraft, are now required to pay personal property taxes in the state of California. Texas exempts fractional aircraft from taxation because they view them to be commercial. However, they are subject to the property taxes in Texas. So there are, fractionally owned aircraft are subject to tax in your state unless an exemption applies. And you don't have a 135 exemption, so the argument of, well, it's on 135 doesn't hold water, and it's a 91 subpart K.
So as a part of the study, could we get, I know this isn't supposed to have recommendations in it, but some type of recommendation how Minnesota could pursue revenues from the fractional ownerships using the Minnesota facilities?
You just me.
I guess that's what we're supposed to kind of be doing now, is bringing it all together and saying, now that we have the information, how do we want it used? What kind of way do we want it packaged up in the end that we might look at some changes legislatively?
I can take it a little bit outside the box for you, because I was told to do those specific states, but I would be more than happy in my final report to put in some recent activity among all the different states of what they've done to make themselves appear more tax-friendly, and maybe are more tax-friendly, but certainly the appearance is that they're more tax-friendly. So I can put that in the final report, recent legislation, say last couple of years, what's happened in the states.
That would be great.
Mr. Chairman, Ray, I know Ray's, we've talked about this before, and I'm glad he raised the issue here, but I'm just thinking about all ramifications of going after, if I can use that word, the fractionals, because it is a new marketing tool that allow smaller companies to take advantage of the benefits of corporate aviation without having to bite off a $40 million jet. They just bite off a chunk of it. I know MBAA probably has something to say about this and the way it fits in. I'd like to hear from a couple other entities as we move along about the whole discussion about fractionals, because I have a hunch as we listen to the taxation discussion, as we're thinking about this, we're thinking about traditional aviation, general, corporate, and commercial, and this is kind of a new player, a new twist in the last 5 to 7 years. I'm not sure we know quite how to get our arms around it. Because they do use the infrastructure as a benefit to them, but we want to, let me speak only for myself, I'm not interested in disincentivizing anybody from using the system and paying into it. I'd rather we built it, we controlled our costs, and we maximized the benefits, but we want to keep it fair. So if they are tooling in here and using our terminals and runways and approaches, they pay for something for that. But I don't want us to be perceived as being punitive about it, but being fair, even-handed about it. And I think the folks that own their own flight departments might have something to say about how we treat that. So I don't know. Is NetJets part of your team at all?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I can speak to Neil. I guess kind of a wide range in there. I think the goal from our perspective, and I think most everybody on the panel, is that the state of Minnesota, from the operators and the state standpoint, want to make sure that the state remains competitive and on a field with other states, not only our neighboring states, but throughout the country, for general aviation, for fractional ownerships, for the commercial airlines, for the FBOs and the airports and the operators, everybody who's involved in the aviation commerce picture here for the state. And so to get into an area where we're, as you said, disincentivizing people to, whether it's a shared ownership or a whole ownership or the commercial airline hub structure here, we get out of line and it's gets out of balance with one area or another contributing into this. For the fractional portion, though, when we look at opportunity areas, I think you hit on registration fees appears to be an opportunity area. Fuel tax seems to be an opportunity area. Mm-hmm. And when we first look at who uses the system, it benefits from our outstanding system here in Minnesota, that fractional operators, Ray gave the direct dollar comparison on some of them, seems to be at least an opportunity area of somebody who uses and benefits from the facilities, yet is probably extremely out of line on what they contribute to the system. So,
and again, I think, and you guys can correct me if I have been sitting here the whole time not understanding, but I thought we anticipated that we would be sliding some of the fees around, mm-hmm. trying to make it fair, make it competitive, mm-hmm. but again, to at least in the eyes of a lot of operators, change the balance so that it looks more comparable to other states, and maybe we don't really shift the costs, although those that aren't paying their fair share, if you will, they might go up somewhat. But I guess I always thought, you know, from the get-go, that part of this was a shifting and sliding around, so we're not seeing all that burden in one column on a business.
I have a question.
Go ahead,
Chairman. How are the registration fees enforced? Ask that question, because at the end of the day, I live in a nice, really warm state, and you all have a wonderful, nice period of time as well. People sit out at the airport and take down tail numbers. And if they go in there and they see that that aircraft is not registered in the state of Arizona, they'll send a letter out saying, we've seen your aircraft to the state of Arizona. We have no record of you paying registration fees. Please demonstrate to us that you don't owe registration fees to Arizona. Because Arizona has a 90-day rule. So even if you're not a resident of Arizona, but your aircraft comes to Arizona 91 times in a year, you owe a non-resident tax of 0.1% of fair market value. Hmm. Right now, I believe there's a 60-day rule, or is it a 90-day, 60-day rule in Minnesota, that if the aircraft comes into the state 60 days within a calendar year, it's subject to registration. Doesn't matter whether it's a resident or non-resident. So there's another opportunity, not an opportunity, but, you know, most of the states are spending a lot more time enforcing existing rules rather than trying to impose new taxes. So looking at that. And on the side note on this, on the fractional, and fractional is only fractional. It's not shared. It's not another form of shared ownership. It is subpart K. And you, Ray, you brought up a good point. I left that off of my report. I should add in, how do the states treat subpart K? Because the states do treat subpart K differently than they treat Part 91. So it would be just a capturing of how do other states, and maybe just, you know, in the final report where I'm going to show, you know, some changes, like how are aircraft that are operated under subpart K treated by the states, period, and just so there's just a nice picture to look at.
Mr. Chair, currently I'm not aware of my office doing any extensive enforcement of checking tail numbers and registration. It's mainly a honor system that has been going on for several years. One of the things I thought might be of interest, when you put down the number of employees, it's my impression, I was told that 10 years ago our office had 50-some people. Mm-hmm. Now we're down to 30-some people. If we were in the enforcement wing, then we would probably have to look at how do we do that. To my knowledge, we do not enforce the 60-day rule because we just don't go around and check.
Well, I know my aircraft personally hasn't left the ground in a long, long time, over a year, but you guys send me them nice letters of you still wanting the registration, even though I don't use it.
Mr. Chairman, I believe one of those positions lost was an enforcement position within the last 10 years.
Okay. Anything else? We're just kind of quieting down. Neil?
Mr. Killian brought up the point again of, you know, are we going to be able to find specific anecdotal airport or aircraft owners that are outside the state that are moving and shifting around? You gave you the idea of trying to track registration and here and there. Can you expand upon maybe some areas and some states that have been successful in lowering their tax and cost picture? And Connecticut comes to mind because of their neighboring states, and it's turned out to be very successful in the farther of what their revenue generation and things have done. And it sort of comes into the, and it's a little bit foggy, the if you build it, they will come idea. And I know we don't want to get into some just pie-in-the-sky promise here, but there has been some success stories in that, has there not?
Yes. Connecticut doesn't have a lot of big airports. That's the big thing. You know, they don't have a large hub airport necessarily. Well, they got Bradley. But they not only did away with the sales tax on aircraft in Connecticut, but then turned right around and did away with the property tax on aircraft and replaced it with an aircraft registration fee, maxing it out at $2,500. The state bought in on this, and basically over a period of 5 years, they subsidized the counties with money to make up for the difference of the loss of property tax revenue. So over the 5 years, the counties figured out other ways to generate that revenue, the lost revenue off of the aircraft. The biggest problem facing the Northeast right now, though, is that Rhode Island tried to do away with their exemption this year, Connecticut tried to do away with their exemption this year, and Massachusetts tried to do away with their exemption this year. They were all defeated, the proposals to do away with the exemption, but I don't know if it's going to stay, hold tight forever. Massachusetts, they only have a registration fee of $250, no personal property tax, and no sales tax. So they're generating no revenues off of GA, but they're generating a huge amount of revenues off the airlines because they do tax the airlines. Rhode Island, TF Green, is the only airport, and it's owned by the state. They've done that. I think the better examples I like are Illinois, Michigan, and Indiana, where they said, we're going to give a maintenance exemption. We're going to allow people to, non-residents to bring their aircraft into the state to boost our economy, to give jobs to people, more jobs in the state, to work on these aircraft, but we're not going to tax those aircraft. We're not going to, zero in on those aircraft. California has a similar exemption as well, that you can bring the aircraft into California. Arizona has a similar exemption. Texas has a similar exemption. Basically, you can bring the aircraft, a non-resident can bring the aircraft into the state for work and remove it, and there's no taxing on that aircraft. So, looking at that, it was a very strong lobby effort by Duncan Aviation, Landmark Aviation. I think Midcoast is doing a big push on it as well. These are maintenance facilities around the country that are branching out into different states.
Mitch. Mr. Chairman and members, I think that this discussion kind of is starting to boil down into the what I was trying to make by my point by saying, how many are we missing out on? Because I think from airport operators' perspective, both the MAC and Minnesota Council of Airports, our goal going into this is hopefully that the state airports fund doesn't go backwards and that the revenue doesn't decrease, whatever. We need to keep it whole, and that we've demonstrated time and time again that there's more projects out there than there is funds. So we hope that we don't go backwards. So my concern by talking about that again was that we decide that we want to catch a few bad guys by lowering the aircraft registration fee or whatever it might be, but in doing that, we lower the amount of revenue going into the state airports fund. We need to find out where we're at. I mean, are we only missing out on $10,000? Are we missing out on, hundreds of thousand dollars that could be going into that airports fund? Because we throw out the baby with the bathwater, and we miss out on the revenue that's going into that fund because we want to catch a couple of bad guys, and I still haven't got my arms around that couple of bad guys and what we're doing. So as we move forward, I think it would be very important that we don't come up with a state airports fund that's got a big hole in it.
Yes. And again, Mitch, that very good point. When we only have anecdotal evidence and we even talk about shifting things around so that things look even rosier without messing with the bottom line of the aviation fund, how will we know if we're attracting new people? So I think, if we have any offers there is when we're working with this report, and that was the kind of thing I was looking at, going, well, okay, what if we lowered registration, raised fuel tax, did some of these other things with what we had in the report? I started thinking, does that gain us anything as well? Because we're still back to anecdotal evidence, and until people start coming in or business owners start saying, yeah, we're going to put more aircraft on the ground, what kind of benchmark, if anybody has any ideas how we could benchmark if we're looking at improving? Do we all have three friends we can bring into the realm that we know move their aircraft out of state, where we can say, if we did this, I think these guys would, or the people in this situation would come back? I don't know how we get to what we're trying to get to, because the end game is increasing the aviation business within the state of Minnesota is, how I'm seeing it.
I call it the fear factor. If you start naming names, then they do get on the list, because I bet you those aircraft are spending 60 days in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, then you get back into the enforcement. You know, they're hangaring it, they're registering it. It is primarily hangared in Wisconsin, but Dime to Donuts, it's coming into, you know, Minnesota on a frequent basis.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's good that we have these discussions regularly, because things change just because people are always thinking up really good things to do that are valuable to other folks. The whole fractional program is relatively new in the marketplace and presents us with new challenges. And I think we've got a taxing structure, taxing and fees, I'll include them all the same, that's based on a model that worked well for the last 25, 30 years, and it's good for us to examine it from top to bottom. The anecdotal evidence, though, that Mitch is referring to me, has more than just a revenue side to it. It has an opportunity side to it also, because I remember distinctly one FBO calling, and he was pretty upset because he lost a turboprop to a neighboring state, and he let a mechanic go and cut back the hours on the rest of his force. That has a direct economic impact on the airport and on our state economy. And I'm just wondering, that's what was one of the impetuses for this committee. How much other economic activity do we lose, or opportunity costs are we missing out on, opportunities that we're missing out on, because we're not as competitive as we once were? I've got an article right here. West Virginia has a push to exempt its all of its aviation activity in the general aviation realm from state taxes, because they hope to incentivize a couple of refurbishment centers within the state of West Virginia. You can come there and buy your Grumman Tiger, not pay sales tax on it. Register it there, if you will. And those things are going on. Things are always changing, and it's good for us to be abreast of what's happening. I might just throw out one other small thing to consider as we're trying to keep track of people, and that's the new ADS-B program that the FAA is pushing here over the next handful of years, where we will all be required to constantly broadcast our aircraft tail number, serial number, where we come from, where we're going, how fast we're going there, and how high we are. That would be a pretty easy matter for FlightAware, somebody at Aeronautics to track on FlightAware, everybody coming in and out of the state on any kind of a flight plan over about 6,000 feet, I think, which would be almost every corporate aircraft. So, folks, I guess my point is things are changing. It's up to us to keep abreast of what's happening in the market. And my goal, hopefully, is to position the aviation industry in this state to be competitive, to be well-funded, but to be competitive. And if we do have to move revenue around, cut a fee, my fond hope is we can raise it somewhere else that still keeps us competitive and keeps the aeronautics fund as intact as possible. And then, of course, we have to keep the aeronautics fund out of late-night discussions at the end of session, so we don't lose even more money that's sitting around. So.
Well, I like the idea of Nell talking about what's recent state activity, what some of these states are doing in exempting out-of-state aircraft from coming in to get maintenance and service. We have good mechanics here in Minnesota. We have good interior people, good paint people. If we can look at options like that to bring in more aircraft from around the country to keep our people busy, we do make it up on the other end in terms of employee tax, income tax. So there's other ways, but I don't know how, again, how do we project how much more business we would get in order to look at those kind of things. I'm going to take 1 minute out here for, we have to do one piece of actual approving the minutes before I forget. So if you guys don't mind, is there any questions on the minutes or any corrections to the minutes of our last meeting? Like to get that out of the way before I forget it, because I'm, you know, prone to do those kind of things when I'm thinking about everything.
Mr. Chairman, I thought they looked fine. So I would move that we approve or adopt the minutes of the June 13th meeting, I think it was, we had right in front of us, right?
Yes, the minutes of June 13th, 2008 meeting. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, motion carries. We've approved the minutes. We've got that out of the way. All right. Neil, did you have something then?
Yeah, I had one more thing, Mr. Chairman. Neil, you mentioned, I think, part of there on one of the slides that the state of Michigan has no flight line property tax or no tax on 121, 135. I think maybe as part of the study going forward to make sure that we keep things in balance, that, and especially with regards to transitioning in the airline business right now, that you know, Minnesota maintains a competitive balance on what their cost is from the commercial side and the airline side with Michigan and Tennessee and Georgia and some of those directly competing states right now. I know it's very important with the MAC and our communications with them that, you know, the cost per in-plane passenger stays not only in the lower half, mm-hmm. but pushes towards their goal of the lower third of, mm-hmm. of similar hub states, and that maybe that should be part of the study. And I know you have a lot of that information in there going forward that from a commercial and airline perspective, the state and the MSP here remains in a competitive position.
That's a great point. Going back to what Representative Beard said earlier, we don't want to hurt one segment of aviation to cover some other segments, so we want to make sure that we keep it balanced all the way across. But, again, I'm still that bottom-line anal person in terms of looking at charts and costs. And, mm-hmm. And I think my personal opinion is part of our problem is the perception because we may have loaded the fees up on one column as opposed to spreading them out like other states. So for whatever that's worth, because I look at that as a 25-year business owner, I would always look at those kind of things and say, well, how can we change our operation so we're not in that column or paying on that specific item? Right.
Mr. Chair, just a question on Michigan, and they've got you know, over half of their fund is coming from bonds. Can you comment on the bonding part of that?
No, I don't. I don't know. I just know that they were funded through bonds. Michigan?
Yes. $12 million, it says, is categorized as bonds.
No, but I can certainly find out what the bonds are. Illinois is also one of the states that receives significant money from bonds. Even though I don't have it on here, the last time I was able to get survey information from Illinois was 2002. Didn't think it was relevant this
sure.
year.
All right.
And, but I can answer the, I can get an answer to the question on bonds.
Okay. And then one other comment, you know, looking at the state aeronautics departments across the page, having been involved with airports in two other states, one of them is mentioned here, there's a big difference in what those services are and what they provide, and maybe some services may be very valuable to the users, others may not be so valuable, so I think that's something we need to consider. We talked about enforcement, and Mitch talked about, you know, how much are we talking about? Are we missing a big piece of the pie, or is it not worth spending money on enforcement? But I think when you look across that list of states, some states provide elements that are very useful. Ours is, I think, one of the finest as far as providing services and opportunities that benefit both the airports and the users to ensure a safe operating environment. So I think we need to certainly take that into consideration as well.
Okay. One of the or the couple of notes I made as well is, and it probably would go back to MAC or MnDOT, Department of Aeronautics, Nell had brought up some states getting a large amount of money on these system plans, or some states getting money in terms of federal monies on block grants. Have we looked at other ways that Minnesota might approach things, or are we approaching it with the most effective? Do we analyze that on a regular basis to know that our approach is getting us the most money back in terms of our federal dollars?
Mr. Chair, we are looking at a couple of things. One for clarification, and maybe Peter Buchan behind me can clarify this, but I think that that reference to the Wisconsin system plan, we're required every so many years to update our system plan, and I'm just wondering if I know the last time MnDOT updated their plan, it was well over $500,000, and I'm just wondering if that isn't what that's pertaining to, is that they're updating their system plan, and so rather than it shows up as a system plan grant, mm-hmm. So that's what that probably is.
Could be. That's the information is obtained from the SAO. This is the money that's reported. This is the 07. So these states received monies from the FAA for their system plan in 2007.
And we get significant monies in terms of federal for our system plans as well?
Yes. I mean, it comes out of our total federal appropriation. It's not an additional amount of money, but periodically we will take the federal money and submit a request for a system plan grant, which FAA would approve.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, to add a little bit of clarity, that the federal plan is called the National Plan of Integrated Airport Systems, and they don't send out a bunch of federal employees to look at it. They have each state do it and provide it, but the federal government does fund the state. And so I think what we're seeing in there is just that state happened to be getting their money that year to do their plan. But when we do that, the feds do fund it as well.
Right.
And it would show up as a separate line item on that report that year.
And in terms of block grants as opposed to a specific project, grant monies coming back, does that give us any benefit, or are we still maximizing based on our project requests?
Well, Mr. Chair, block grant states are restricted by the number, and I think it's in federal legislation.
Okay.
And the maximum, I think there's 10 states that are block grant states, or 12. And they are just in the process of polling the other states. We've expressed an interest, but we're not sure about what the advantages and disadvantages are for being a block grant state.
Well, good. You answered my question that we're at least always checking to make sure we're maximizing the dollars we receive back. Anything else? Representative Wincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a work plan planning question, and that is, I know that the LCC staff is here. Maybe Mr. Hubinger can actually tell us what the original bill said that formed this advisory task force, and I know our House fiscal staff is here. My understanding is that we're coming into session the first week of January, and that this, and I'd love to be corrected if I'm wrong, but that this work of this group must be done before that. And generally, all the people in this room are not here the final week or two of December because they've earned vacation, which they take, and they should, because then they get ready for a very brutal session, and it should be a tough one. So I think the staff at the Minnesota House, and I'm sure it's the same in the Minnesota Senate, is, you know, mostly not around that last week of December. That's a general that takes place across this country. So it seems to me we're looking at about a month to have all the work completed. And I'm wondering what the work plan is to get this in a report form ready for the legislature, you know, by middle December. And if that's not accurate, if this commission is allowed to go longer than year end, that was not my understanding. So it seems like people are talking about a lot of studying and work left to do, and I'm having a difficult time imagining how that's all going to be pulled together in a few weeks, and just wanting some clarification if I'm kind of on the right page for the closure of this report, or are we going to go off into January? I don't think the bill allows us to do that. Can someone clarify that from staff?
Greg, you want to give us a clarification and kind of reiterate what our task was at hand so that we all remember where our focus was supposed to be as we've digressed?
Morning, members. I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. The language in the appropriations bill called for the task force to study issues regarding the best methods for funding airports in the state, in the airport state funding. And you're to make your report by January 15th. As Representative Wincheski points out, though, the task force expires January 1st.
First, okay.
According to the contract that the task force has with the consultant, she has completed the first two of the specific tasks in outlining the comparisons of funding sources across the country. Her third task is to write a final report, as Nell has mentioned. Mm-hmm. The timeline that we've been operating under would have her complete that report by the end of this month, November 24th, I think.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Wincheski.
Thank you. If I may, and that's yeah. good for us all to keep in mind, I guess, just to remind folks who are not members of the legislature, on January 3rd, we will have different members of the legislature. So not everybody who's a legislator today is going to be on that day. A number of people lost their elections. We have all kinds of new freshmen coming in the House, and we even have new senators, even though that it's not a year for the Senate. And so that's why I bring it up. It's important for everyone to remember that the way the legislature functions is you really can't have legislators completing the task of this past year. I mean, and I really think, while the task force rightfully ends on the 1st, I don't think any of us here are going to be here on the 1st, on New Year's Day. I would imagine the building will be locked up. So I just, Mr. Chair, maybe you have an idea. Will we meet one more time to receive the report? Will we meet twice? And I just know that we're going to get to that really crazy time, kind of mid-December. So I'm just wanting us to kind of think through, what do we need to do to complete the task at hand?
Good question. The report is supposed to be done when again? November
24th. It's also the date my granddaughters do.
I'll have it done early then.
But no, it's due. What I would need, honestly, Chairman, Mr. Chairman, is that clear guidance as to the couple of other items we would like to put into the report. And I have recent state activity and how Subpart K is taxed. Mm-hmm. Those are two additional items we'd like to kind of put into the final report. What else do we want to put into the final report so that I can get it done?
Well, I think Brian had mentioned specifically, and you've got enough data in here to kind of break a lot of it out, but what did it mean to different types of users?
Yes.
And Neil had mentioned that in terms of the large commercial operators. Brian was talking everybody from down to smaller general aviation. So I think we, in some way, need to bracket all that.
Would you want me to run numbers for each state that we talked about? In other words, and I'm just asking because I need clear guidance so I can make quick work of this. I have stated how 91 and 135 and 121 is taxed. I have not put in Subpart K, so that's one area that has not been put in as to how they are taxed. Do you want me to run the numbers on if I was a Cirrus, if I was a corporate flight department, if I was a 135 aircraft and a 121 and run the numbers?
Mr. Chair, I think that's kind of what I was looking for, something in layman's terms that would look at a few different operators or at least one in each mm-hmm. category and really tell us what it means from a cost standpoint.
I think that's a great idea, Brian. So now
this is going to be example. I'm going to put my assumption in. My assumption will be, assuming that they are paying the correct taxes, yeah, this is how they would be taxed. Right. Yes.
A good example under each category, at least, that we can look at and say, here's how we compare, here's how the numbers look, to give us some ideas on what we might play with, if you will.
And, Mr. Chairman, I guess for the area I referred to, said, is the state of Minnesota competitive for commercial airlines?
Mm-hmm. Do you have something, Tracy?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I have a couple of thoughts as I kind of sit here and try to gel that and kind of follow up on the commercial airlines point. What I took away from this report was that it appeared that Minnesota, vis-a-vis other states, was pretty well funded.
Mm-hmm.
You look at what's going on here. And then as I'm hearing, and I think it's been everyone's goal here, kind of fairness among the various people that fund this fund and the various groups that fund this fund, as well as our own respective competitors. And I just, from a commercial airline perspective, I also agree that's very important, both within the group as well as vis-a-vis our competitors. And just to kind of look at the Minnesota funding, if you look at Northwest alone, just to remind folks kind of how much of this pretty well-funded fund we provide, we have, of the fuel taxes, we're over $2.5 million of that amount. And we don't pay the registration fees like many folks around in this room, but of the property taxes, we pay just Northwest, not our airlinks, we pay approximately $4 million a year. I mean, that's a pretty hefty portion of this fund that comes from one airline, and that you want to make sure that, again, to maintain the funding, that that even fairness treatment continues. And when I speak with respect to the property tax, I hear the registration tax and what those effective rates are, and I note that our effective rate on an annual basis is 1% every year for that air flight property tax. So as we're kind of thinking fairness and you know, trying to keep this fund well-funded, I ask that you keep that in mind as well.
That makes sense to me. But just remind me who Northwest is. Are those the people vacating that big building out south? No. I got to have my fun with the whole thing, you know. It's, if you don't like people that like to have fun, I guess I'm the wrong person to be a chair, right?
I just want to support Tracy. I was recently, like I said earlier, hired to do an airline survey of how the airlines are taxed in the 50 states. Mm-hmm. And I have been in general aviation for 21 years. That's been my entire focus. And you can't even call the Airline Transport Association and get data on the airlines right now. And I found out that the airlines, whether we want to believe it or not at GA, are paying, if not their fair share, but more than their fair share with these airline property taxes. And because these airline property taxes are not necessarily dedicated to aviation, we really don't know the impact because they go right into a general fund and they get lost in the mix. So at least in a couple of states, we can track it better. But I was very surprised to see how the airlines were taxed.
Well, and it's a very good point because in terms of keeping our hub one of the most competitive in the country, it benefits consumers in a great way. So,
And you can see that Arizona is very similar, and I bet you U.S. Airways can come up with similar numbers on how much they fund the Arizona system.
Mr. Chairman, I have to run to another committee meeting that started 40 minutes ago, but I think Chair Hillstrom in Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs is having a hearing tomorrow, I think, to discuss the possible effects of the merger, just to informational type discussion of the ins and outs of that. So any members that would be interested in that, I can't remember the exact time. I think, is it 10 or 11?
10
o'clock tomorrow. And there'll be an informational hearing about that.
My legislative assistant, Peter's here, and Nell, he can give you my private email on my BlackBerry.
Okay.
So if we need to clarify things, I can get in contact with group members and things as we finalize this report. And members, my first thought here is first or second week of December to kind of put out some dates to you guys and see if we can receive that report and go over it if that works. So again, with Representative Dill still doing some recovery, I understand we'll... Is that what was going on, Peter, with Representative Dill? Was...
Yeah, I don't want to speculate on it.
Okay. Anyway, we'll let him take charge of the next meeting. It was supposed to be his. He had some other issues going on, personal. If we need to still keep the thing going, our office will do that. But first or second week of December, and we will email you guys out a couple of options and see what works best to get the most amount of members here. Get that out of the way early in December so that we can all actually spend time with our families and friends over the Christmas holiday. So if there's nothing else... Meeting is adjourned.